Welcome back to the Blasphemous Pope Cathedral. I am your Blasphemous Pope, Harry. Okay, today's meditation 25, What Lies Beneath the Surface. Before we get into this, we are going to take care of these housekeeping notes. First and foremost, as always, the Friends of the Blasphemous Pope podcast. We have our paid supporter, Real Liberty Media, that is run by Mr. Vincent Easley. Currently, they are going through some changes over on the website, and the chat options has been affected, but I believe they've cleared that up. But this is all in the name of progress and moving the site forward. Speaking of RLM at reallibertymedia.com, Broad Assumptions, Friends of the Podcast, Donna Van Meter and Amy Lynn Russell will be having their own show. It will be hosted on Real Liberty Media. Star O'Hara with her Extremist Being Awesome project. It's a motivation and accountability group. Basically, you get your project together and you go into this session, and it's a two-hour session, and you basically work on your project. It kind of forces you to move forward with your projects because it dedicates time. I believe the cost of that is $20 a month. You can go to Star O'Hara's Substack and sign up for that there. Nathan Frazier, the master of the dark arts of marketing. You can learn his esoteric tricks and his ways about doing things on Success Magica over on YouTube. You can also find him on various other socials as well. I believe he's now building his Instagram presence. Now, we have a podcaster here on Anchor that we are connected to. Her name on Twitter, her Twitter handle right now is farmersonly.com. That's at Little Nugs Bunny. At Little Nugs Bunny. And her podcast here on Anchor is Wild Little Podcast. It is a very wild ride. I'm just going to let you know that right now. Projects. We have multiple projects going on, and that's part of what our paid support and our ad revenue, that's what that goes towards, whether it be the hydroponic indoor grow, the outdoor balcony grow, the composting, and other small projects that we're doing. They all get funded prospectively in the future when we get enough funds by this podcast. So if you want to see any of those things, you can check out all of my socials. It's Harry Felker under almost everything. TikTok is Harry Felker Base. Also along with that, we have the challenge that I'm doing, the physical challenge. I call it Sanus, the mind and body. I'm pretty much putting myself back into shape. That's what that is. And you can follow that on my webpage at harryfelker.wordpress.com. Also, it is worth noting that if there's anything that is in a podcast that requires diagrams or requires links and whatnot, I try to put it on my webpage rather than in the description, because I'm limited in the description as opposed to a blog post that I can write myself. Speaking of which, if you do wish to reach out to me, you can always find me via socials. You can reach me via leaving a comment on my WordPress. You can leave a voice message here on Anchor. And also, and granted, I am not on it very often, but you can reach out to me via my Discord, the Blasphemous Pope Discord. There is a link in the description to get an invite to the Discord, and you can feel free to join. And have any direct questions you want direct answers to, we can always take care of that there. And now I'm going to follow up with the rest of the Friends of the Blasphemous Pope podcast. These are people who they've been supporting me, they've been spreading the word, but they they don't have like a focused project that I can put my finger on. We have Christy Caruana over on Instagram. We Trade Free, Kennedy Edwards, and London Gardens over on Twitter. And the indomitable Mr. Michael Witt. He also has been spreading the word and being encouraging over on the Instagram. If you wish to be part of either of these, the way to do that is become a listener supporter for as little as 99 cents a month. You can help make the projects that I do here happen, or at least you can make them happen with an increased frequency, because running out of pocket means that I have to ration how much progress I can really make. With that being said, after this brief message, we will be getting on with the meditation. That's meditation 25, What Lies Beneath the Surface. Welcome back, and thank you for coming back after that brief ad break. So, meditation 25, What Lies Beneath the Surface. This obviously is a continuation of our meditation series here on water. So we're going to be talking about groundwater. When I talk about groundwater, I'm meaning wells, springs, and seeps. I'm not necessarily talking about rivers, lakes, and whatnot. So I want to make sure that's abundantly clear that this is the direction we're going in. We're going to talk about wells, and we're going to talk about springs and seep in development and whatnot. So when we talk about water, especially groundwater, there's three sources that we really can concentrate on. Meteoric, connate, and magmatic. Now, meteoric is groundwater as a result from the water cycle. It rains, water goes into the ground. It's generally the most common form of groundwater you're going to find. There's that. Nothing really spectacular about that. Connate water is found in sedimentary rock. It gets trapped in the pores of sedimentary rock. And it's usually in formations that are underwater, meaning like you can have a freshwater pocket underneath another body of water that you could tap for usage. And then there is magmatic. Now, magmatic water is from condensation due to volcanic activity. This is generally not something that we are going to be wanting to be drinking. This is very rich in heavy metals. If you do some work with like smelting and whatnot, this water is probably what you're going to be looking for, but it's definitely not going to be something you're going to want for drinking purposes or for taking care of your plants right off the bat. It requires a lot of treatment. So how do we realize these sources of water? This is the big thing, right? You know, great, the water's there. Now, how do we make those things become sources for us to use? Well, first and foremost, everyone knows what a well is. You know, a water well is a completely appropriate way in order to get water out of the ground, whether you do it via piping and a pump, or you have a giant hole in the ground that you drop a bucket in. A well is a well. Now, when we deal with wells, we have three methods of getting to the water. You can dig, you can drill, or you can drive. Okay, when you dig, you're digging. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. And when you're drilling, it's also pretty self-explanatory. But when I say drive, I mean using a large pile driver in order to drive your pipe into the ground and get into the underground aquifer where the water is residing. Now, as far as this is concerned, wells are not home projects. They're not something most people are going to be equipped to create on their own. There are many companies out there, but you are talking about tens of thousands of dollars in order to have a well created on your property. And there's no guarantee that that well will actually produce enough water for you. Just want to keep that in mind, that if you are going to go this route with a well, it's a gamble, because you can't get the money refunded. And if the well's in a bad spot, well, you're out the money and you have no well. Now, as far as the cost of the well itself, it has a lot to do with the depth. And the drilling itself is somewhere in the neighborhood of like $5,000 to $12,000. That's just the drilling. And you're looking at about $300 to $500 of annual maintenance costs when you're dealing with a well. Also, it's worth mentioning, any groundwater, you are going to want to make sure that you are testing regularly. The reason why we test regularly is because things under the ground can change and we won't necessarily know that that's happening. And if your water changes, you're potentially, risking your life by continuing to drink it. And that's why it's important to test your water and make sure that you know what is in your water and what is not. It also helps to know if you should be filtering your water a lot more than you are, for the sake of, let's say, your appliances and whatnot. When we come back, we are going to be talking about springs, potentially even seeps. We'll see if we can get to it, because they're very parallel resources. Talk to you soon. Welcome back. All right, so we're now going to be talking about springs and seeps. And as I had mentioned, they are a parallel resource, meaning it's generally coming from the same place. It's just a matter of the placement of where the water source is. Springs are generally at the surface or above surface, and seeps are below the surface. Now, in development, you are going to have to dig no matter what, so you should just get used to that idea. It's not an easy process. This isn't a job that you do in less than a day. So just keep that in mind. Now, the way these are different from wells is that, obviously you're going down to an aquifer and drawing water up. As opposed to a seep or a spring, where the natural pressure of the earth is actually pushing the water to the surface for you. Now, when we deal with seeps, because seeps do have an extra step, we have to find the source. And that does require quite an extensive amount of digging. What a seep is basically an underground spring. And how you can find them is you are going to be looking for pieces of land that, while everything around it is dry, you have this wet patch, this very wet patch. You can find them near swamps often, though I don't suggest using swamp water. They exist away from swamps, but that's one of the fastest, the easiest ways to actually locate what a seep is to go to a swamp, and you'll notice like there's patches of ground that are just super saturated with water and spongy. So first and foremost, you have to find the source of the seep. This does require a lot of digging, and you want to dig down until you reach what is known as stable soil, like a clay layer. And then you want to dig around to get your now created collection pool filling with water quickly. And when I say quickly, we're talking about, you know, like anywhere from 3 to 5 gallons per minute. It's not, we're not talking about like free flowing water like a river. We're not talking about a trickle. You need a decent amount of flow going into your collection pool. You have to dig around and encourage greater flow without collapsing the flow. So that's also important. When you create this collection pool, you are going to want to build what is called a discharge trench. And what the discharge trench is going to do is it's going to help remove some of the water from your pool so that you can continue working in there. The discharge trench, as a forewarning, you should probably try to dig it in the direction that you want your water to be flowing after the fact. It's just going to save you some time and some effort in the long run. So you get your discharge trench, your water's flowing out, you're going to notice one thing immediately. The surrounding area of seep around from where you initially dug is going to start to dry out, and that's a good thing. That means that you're collecting the water and the water isn't getting lost. Now, this is applicable for both. So you're going to have your collection pool, and you're going to build a collection pool at a spring as well as within the seep. You then have to dam your, you know, build a dam. Now, generally speaking, polyethylene is one of the best products on the market to use for water projects, so I'm going to always suggest getting yourself a polyethylene sheet to build your dam. Or if you want, you can go to practicalpreppers.com and they have pre-built dams there for you. They also have spring boxes and other things for water collection as well. So just keep that in mind. If you don't want to go through the process of building your own dam, you can have one pre-made for you. Now, when you get your dam, you have your trench set up, you have your pool set up, you put your dam in place, and then what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to take that clay, that foundation clay that you're using, and seal your dam. Once you seal your dam off and you have your pipe coming out of your dam for your water flow, you're going to notice that the trench area is going to completely dry up as well, and that is also a good thing. The less water you're losing, the better. If you're dam has a faulty seal, you're going to notice that there's still going to be water in that trench, and that's one of the things you want to avoid. When we come back, we're going to talk about how we go from having the trench to having the water go to your location. Thank you. we're back. Okay, so you now have your drainage trench, and you have your discharge trench, and you have your collection pool dammed. Everything is all put in place there. The next thing you want to do is you're going to want to fill that collection area with large gravel. And I know you're thinking to yourself, why would we dig all that up just to fill it up with gravel? It's because the gravel will act as a mechanical filter and help manage some of the dirt that's going to be coming from the collection pool, obviously. When you get the gravel in there, you're going to want to put some form of plastic over the gravel and then bury it. The reason why you want to do that is because you want to keep animals out of your collection pool. You don't want to have mosquitoes or any other bugs laying there, putting their eggs and therefore larvae in your water supply. You don't want dead animals wandering, you don't want animals wandering in there and dying in there. All of these things can contaminate your water, so you want to try to avoid that. And the best way to do that is to lay some plastic over your gravel pile, mound the dirt up over it. Now, if you don't go to Practical Preppers to pick up your dam and the pieces, when you do create your own dam, you are going to want to have an overflow, and you're going to want to have access to that via a top mounted pipe, basically just in case you need to like shock your collection pool. That's how you do that. You want to do that via a pipe at the surface and not have to dig everything up, obviously. Now, where does your discharge pipe go to? Well, it goes to something we call a spring box. Now, a spring box is a piece of equipment. Of course, you can always buy one or you can build it yourself, that basically acts as a secondary trap for sediment and the like. So what you do is further down, of course, at a lower grade than your collection pool, you are going to dig a hole, either pipe in a spring box that you bought or create your spring box and pipe into it. And what will happen is you will find every once in a while that you'll have to open up the spring box and pull sediment out of the bottom, because it is going to be a sediment catch at the bottom of it. There'll be some leftover sediment from your collection pool. Now, another thing to remember is you always need to leave access. All right, you have to make sure that you don't bury everything. You have to have access to your spring box, and you have to have access in a way to your collection pool. Now, I already talked about how you access the collection pool. If you buy a professionally made spring box, a commercial spring box, those will come with the accesses. You just have to make sure you don't bury them, Now, what can we expect from a spring or a seep? The volume that you'll be getting from these things is dependent on flow. But if you can manage to get 3 gallons per minute out of your system, that is more than enough water. That's going to be a livable water supply. Anything more than that makes your life very easy, but 3 gallons per minute is what you're going to need to live. Now, I have to make mention of this. These may not be permanent solutions to your water acquisition needs. Wells and springs and seeps can dry up. They are attached to the natural water cycle, which is a good thing. It means that after a rainy season, if your sources have dried up, they should be replenishing. But it's not guaranteed. And that's something you have to keep in mind, that if your spring or your seep dries up, and it's done, then that's it. It's done. If it's not going to come back, it's not going to come back. If your well dries up, it's done. And if it's not going to come back, well, then it's not coming back. And you have to then make plans otherwise. I greatly appreciate everybody who comes. Thank you for coming and listening. If you have any questions, comments, of course, reach out to me via the messaging app here on Anchor or my website, harryfalker.wordpress.com, and I'll be glad to have a chit chat with you about it. See you next time.